We're going to welcome in Representative Tim McGinnis as the door opens. And Mr. Gary Keg says, look at that red carpet. It is unveiled. And we roll out the red carpet for all of our guests here on the Hot Talk Morning Show. And what do you know? Abracadabra and State Representative Tim McGinnis is with us here this morning. That is what we call holding and reserving and filling airtime as we await our state representative coming from Carolina Forest this morning. Yeah. What's going on, Tim? How are we doing?
Not much, Joe. Thanks for having me. And yeah, sorry, I'm a little late.
You know, you're all right.
Anytime you go anywhere around here, you got to plan at least 20 to 25 minutes, and I think I only gave myself about 15 today, so I apologize.
I have a couple of questions outside of you and your work, you know, under your official capacity as a state representative. You have a teenage daughter. I have an 8-year-old daughter. So where do we start? Can you lay out some things? I know you're very proud. I see the posts on Facebook and all the different things that you do alongside her, and there's nothing better than a little daddy-daughter time. But I have a feeling, you know, over the next 7 or 8 years, things might be changing a little bit in my house in the way she looks at the world.
You think? Yeah.
So where do we start?
13's the tough one. 12, you start to see it, and then 13, and I have a boy and a girl, and they're and both of them around 12 or 13 is kind of when you know, they start thinking for themselves a little bit. And you know, the tough thing about raising kids today, I think you know, there's some pluses and minuses to it, but social media, you know, and that it's just it's a game changer. And you know, knowing what your kids are doing online and making sure that they're not, you know, you have to have those talks, you know, the talks. You got to start having those talks earlier and earlier because, you know, I saw a great billboard somewhere that said, if you're not talking to your kids, someone else is. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we try to do, you know, but you're not going to win the social media battle.
No.
You could try, but
I was wondering, because there's this big question being thrown around there now, you know, what age is too young for a kid's first smartphone?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one. I think we were about 6th or 7th grade, maybe.
Okay.
We you know, and I think most people do it around that time, you know, maybe a little later for some. I think you don't want to go too early, you know. But then again, you know, these are tools they're going to be using now in their life. And so I think educating them on how to use social media and how not to, you know, get caught. And I saw a horrible story last night on, I think it was 60 minutes before the football game, talking about you know, these AI chatbots, and these AI chatbots are telling kids to do these ridiculous things. In one case, that, well, several young people committed suicide. You know, we have these phishing attempts. We had that up. One of the members of the legislature, Brandon Guffey, his son was catfished online, and he commits suicide, and he committed suicide. And you know, we have legislation tightening laws around that kind of phishing and things like that now. And fortunately, they were able to get the guy that did it to his son, guy from Nigeria. You know, and you know, and that's what I always tell the kids too, is okay, that guy or girl who you think you're talking to, who you think is a fellow 12 or 13 year old, that could be a 40 year old person sitting in a basement of their parents' house, you know, somewhere in, you know,
Nigeria.
So it's tough, but you'll get that. But you know, it's fun. You remember being a kid.
And on the flip side, you know, incentives, they work, apparently, at least for my 8-year-old right now, because the incentive is 100 on spelling tests equal ice cream Mondays. And
nice.
Shorty told me on Friday that we're getting 2 scoops on Monday.
Nice.
Dad. And, you know, she's a little bit, you know, not, I won't say behind, but struggling to adapt and adjust to the concepts that they're teaching in math because of the Common Core way of life.
Yeah.
And then Dad has to go back to school to learn the Common Core way of life. So I said, A, on your math test, we're going to the trampoline park for an hour. Okay, what do you know? She comes home with a 93 on Friday. Okay, so we're going to the trampoline park. What I'm getting at is incentives work for young people and all people, most cases.
Well, you touched on something that we've been working very hard at in South Carolina, which is to improve math scores and reading scores. I think reading scores, we've gone back to the science of reading. Okay, we call it the science of reading. It's a new word for an old thing, phonics. It worked. They tried to go to a different system of doing it, part of the whole Common Core approach and things like that. And same thing with math. You know, math is the next one we need to tackle because our you know, that's math was tough for me. Math,
sure.
Some people are not great at math. I was one of them. My dad was a doctor. My mom was an accountant. It skips a generation, apparently. But, you know, if we can teach the teachers to teach the math a way that the kids are going to understand it and the parents are too, and a lot of it is, you know, we come up with a lot of great ideas in higher education, but they don't always translate to the classroom. We need to go back to what works. We did it with reading, and the test scores show that we've improved in reading in South Carolina since we switched over right around the time of the pandemic to the science of reading. Now we need to develop a science of math, and we need to teach the teachers how to teach that. And so it's working with the colleges, working with the high schools, and everybody to try to get these scores up.
There's no question. You need to help supplement what your kids are learning at school, in the home, and it's hard to grasp for the parents at 40, 35, 50 years old, how much more confusing it is for the kid who gets taught one way and then they're taught maybe a different way at home. So, yeah, getting some sort of uniformity there. But one thing that I have seen showing some great reviews and response is the fact that here in South Carolina, we moved forward with this budget proviso earlier this year that we're going to ban phones in the schools and in elsewhere around the country. Florida, for instance, they did this a little bit before we did. And what do you know, in the school districts that have banned phones inside the school, they have seen significant increases in test scores and in grades, along with fewer and fewer behavioral problems that we're seeing. So we haven't really gone down the road to get all the anecdotal data just yet in terms of what we're doing here. But nonetheless, following that trend, it seems to be working elsewhere around the country.
Hey, it's the same for us. You know, phones are addictive. They provide you a dopamine hit. You know, when you're scrolling through them, and when you're young like that and your brain's developing and you have 24/7 access to a device that connects you with everything and contains basically your social life within it, I think it's only right that we try to get the attention focused someplace else for about 6 hours a day.
True.
And, if you talk to any don't talk to any teacher. I'm sure different teachers are going to have different opinions.
Sure.
But if you talk to a lot of teachers, which I have, about what the biggest challenge they face in the classroom is, you know what it is?
Distractions?
Behavior. Yeah. It's behavior. Yeah. We have, teachers are scared. You know, we need to find a way to get kids to behave.
One thing that we have seen, though, when it comes to vacancies within the teaching profession, that has sort of leveled out here in our state after years post-COVID of, a demand and a need when it comes to teachers and vacancies that we have seen. We've seen a bit of a dip and returning to pre-COVID levels. That's a good thing to see, whether it be a little bit more money, taking a little bit of a load off, allowing them extra time to prepare throughout the course of the day. So some of these things seem to be working in terms of getting more teachers in the classroom.
So I came into the legislature, it'll be 8 years ago next month. And when I came in, the speaker then, Jay Lucas, he wanted to pass an omnibus education bill that did everything from teacher salary increases, a whole bunch of fine tuning, and we passed it. And what I thought, what really astounded me is what we've done in those 8 years I've been in there. I'm not saying I'm not taking all credit for it, but of course I did support it and work for it, is getting teacher salaries raised. I mean, it was, when I came in, it was under $30,000, and now we're approaching $50,000. And that was Governor McMaster. When he leaves office, he wants starting teacher salaries to be $50,000 plus, and I think we're on track to do it. And so that, I think that was important, but I don't think, we were talking about science of reading and things like that. It's not all about throwing money at education. It's about making sure that we have the policies in place to allow for a great education system. And I think I know we are making inroads.
So you're talking about, Hilda Dion is education. That's the focus that you have put a lot of attention into during your time office.
I serve on the education committee. I've been on the education committee except for 1 year. So for 7 years, I've been on education. And for five of those 7 years, I've been the subcommittee chair of the higher education subcommittee. So I do a lot with higher ed, but, of course, I know K-12 as well. I'm beginning to understand it. But, we've got great people working up there. Our chairman, Shannon Erickson, she's a former – she owned preschools. Mm. And Jeff Bradley, one of the smartest guys I know, he heads K-12, just a brilliant guy. And he's really involved with AI, and I think that's great for an education perspective, because AI is AI's where we're going, and for better or worse, hold on.
Well, it seems like, right, technology is evolving, and we've got so much access, but it's almost like we're trying to revert back to some sort of old-school way of doing things, because it seems as if it just becomes easier and easier for our kids to accomplish whatever assignment they may have through the technology. But are they really learning anything at the end of the day? Because I know in some districts around the country, they're actually starting to shift in terms of how kids use the technology, meaning the Chromebooks, the tablets, and are actually limiting those assignments and saying, here's a pen and a pencil. You know, why not take notes on a piece of paper? Because you're often retaining and understanding a lot of that information better than just typing words onto a keyboard, meaning the pen is mightier than the keyboard, I guess, in this situation.
And, you know, and to me, I think this is going to be a learning experience for everybody. I mean, our whole society moving forward is what you do with AI. But I think you're right that in education, you need to learn those fundamentals, those basics. You need to know how to read and write. And I thought it was horrible that we stopped teaching cursive for a period. I probably talked about this the last time I was on. So my son, who's now 20, when he was 16, to get his driver's license, I asked him to sign his name, and he looked at me like a deer in the headlights. I'm like, are you serious? You know, how I didn't know that, I don't know, but my son couldn't write cursive. You know, he could print his name, but, you know, so we've got cursive back in the schools now, and I'm not saying that's the reason we do, but that's the reason I voted for it. But, you know, we still have to hold on to the traditional ways of doing things, but we have to be cognizant that something new is out there, and it's going to fundamentally change our society. So we've got to balance education with the traditionalist and also with, here's what you need to know for the future.
Talking with State Representative Tim McGinnis for just a few more minutes. Representative McGinnis, as you look ahead to the legislative session, you'll be back in Columbia a couple days a week beginning in January. Outside of education-related issues, higher education, what do you see coming down the pike?
Energy reform. You know, a lot of the things that we passed last year in the House didn't make it through the Senate. About 95% of what we passed in the House didn't make it through the Senate, because the Senate, called the deliberative body, took a long time on tort reform. Mm. We get into tort reform later. Yeah, I heard you have an attorney coming on. I have a few questions for the – no, I'm known to bash attorneys, but I love attorneys. Some of my best friends are attorneys.
Attorneys until you need one.
Right. Well, and I always tell, you know, I'll be having a conversation up there, and I'll say, I really don't like attorneys, and there will be one standing next to me, except for him. This is a good attorney. Tort reform, I think, is really important, and I think we're getting there, but I don't think we're fully there. I mean, I believe that there's a vicious cycle between attorneys and insurance companies, and they kind of perpetuate this these out of reach. Insurance premiums and things like that. And I really think some judicial reform and tort reform, they all kind of go together. We just need to make sure everybody's doing stuff that's fair, not so we can line companies and people's pockets.
That'll be one issue. Do we continue to move the ball forward in terms of the state's income tax rate, looking to reduce that?
Yes, absolutely. We need to keep pushing for that. I think everybody can agree that it would be great to have a 0% income tax rate. How do we get there? We're starting that work. We've already brought it down. I think we can get down to zero, but I think we're going to have to, you know, some deductions you were able to take in the past, you may not be able to take any longer. Mm. Certain, you know, special interest groups that received certain status. We just have to look at all of those, because I do believe in a flat, fair tax.
Sure.
And the flatter and fairer we can get it, the better, I think.
Lastly, before I let you go, over the last couple of weeks, the South Carolina Department of Transportation has been meeting with folks to look at ways to more modernize the system and to help increase revenues to go to road building, bridge repairs, and whatnot. What do you see coming from that? You're hearing maybe we need to look at the gas tax. Maybe we need to allow local areas to determine how much they can charge, i.e. the ride program here in our area. There's a need. South Carolina, known for better or worse, mainly for worse when it comes to our roads as compared to neighboring states. Where does this conversation go?
Well, there are several committees that have been meeting, ad hoc committees, to look at things like that. Insurance, one of them, the transportation one you mentioned, the other one, which Heather Crawford here in Horry County, she was a co-chair of. We're actually going to be meeting as a caucus on Friday to talk about what, as a caucus, we want to accomplish, the Republican caucus. And I know that some ideas will be born out of that. I think it's crucial that we we do something, because this has been true since I was elected, probably been true around here since before that. If you're not talking about infrastructure, then you're not talking about the issue that probably affects more people than anybody else in your district. And my district, District 56, Carolina Forest, Barefoot Landing into Windy Hill and North Myrtle Beach, believe me, we know about the need for infrastructure. And so kind of figuring out how to tackle that as a state, but our local governments need to be doing it too. I get a lot of phone calls complaining about things, and I'm like, you really need to talk to your county councilman about that, because if it were up to me, you know, and I'm not knocking our county council, they have a tough job to do, but I think people need to be aware that a lot of those decisions that really, really impact you on your day-to-day life, your roads, you know, different things like that, the state may have a little, like in 501, and we're doing our work on 501. Sure. We're getting that widened. But we need to look to our municipal governments, our county governments, to help get that infrastructure ready. It's great to have all the new houses and great to have all the tax revenue, but if we can't sustain the people who are here, we got a problem. And I think the warning light's on now.
State Representative Tim McGinnis with us. No doubt we'll catch up with him when the legislative session resumes in January. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks for making a little space for us here this morning.